Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Worshipping Govardhan Hill, text number 15. Kim Indre Neha Bhutanam Svasva Karmanu Vartinam Anishena Yatar Kartum Svabhavas Vihitam Ninam Kim Indrene Habutanam Svasvar Karmanu Vartinam Anishena Yatar Kartum Svabhava Vihitam Rinam Anishena Yatar Kartum. This is the power of hearing. Anybody else? Kim. What? Indrena. With Indra. Iha. Here. Bhutanam. For living entities. Svasva. Each their own. Karma. Of fruitive action. Anuvartinam. Who are experiencing the consequences. Anishena. Indra. Who is incapable. Anyata. Otherwise. Kartum. To make. Svabhava. By their conditioned natures. Vihitam. That which is ordained. Nrinam. For men. Living beings in this world are forced to experience the consequences of their own particular previous work. Since Lord Indra cannot in any way change the destiny of human beings, which is born of their own nature, why should people worship him? Purport. Lord Krishna's argument here is not a negation of free will. If one accepts the existence of karma as a system of laws awarding reactions for our present activities, then we ourselves, according to our nature, will decide our future. Our happiness and distress in this life have already been adjudicated and fixed according to our previous activities, and not even the demigods can change that. They must award us the prosperity or poverty, sickness or health, happiness or distress due us by our previous work. However, we still retain the freedom to select a pious or impious mode of activity in this life, and the choice we make will determine our future suffering and enjoyment. Very important sentence in this purport. For example, if I was pious in my last life, in this life, the demigods may award me great material wealth. But I am free to spend my riches for good or for bad purposes. And my choice will determine my future life. Thus, although no one can change the karmic results due him in this life, everyone still retains his free will by which he determines what his future situation will be. Lord Krishna's argument here is quite interesting. However, it neglects the overriding considerations that we are all eternal servants of God and must satisfy him by all that we do. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha. It's amazing how you can chant something every day of your life and then forget it. In fact, sometimes when I'm chanting these prayers, I think, do I really know what I'm talking about here? It's just sort of blah, blah, blah. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Gurim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam Paramanandamadivam Sri Chaitanya Ishwaram. Especially when you're in Mayapur in front of about 500 devotees and you're giving class and you think, oh, maybe I'm going to forget the prayers. Then I'll be exposed for the fool that I really am. Anyway. Now, Krishna is actually toying with the cowherd's men and his father. He's playing a game here. So a lot of what Krishna says can't be taken, well, it has to be taken on face value. It's not like Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, which is in all seriousness. But in one sense, here Krishna is pulling the legs of Nanda Maharaj and his friends for a purpose, of course. And actually, ultimately, the message is the same. The message of the Bhagavad Gita and these joking words of Krishna, the message is ultimately the same. You know, surrender to me. Savadharmam parityajya mamekam saranam braja. Surrender to me. Same message. But in this case, Krishna is utilizing the Kama Mimamsa philosophy, which also, as we were discussing yesterday, ultimately is meant to bring people to the point of surrender to Krishna. It's the same thing. But he's using it in such a way as to divert the attention of the residents of Vrindavan away from the Indra Jagya, Indra Puja, to worship of Govardhan Hill. As is mentioned in the beginning of the Krishna book, and as Maharaj mentioned yesterday, that Krishna has a purpose, three purposes here, and he's arguing with the cowherd's men in such a way so as to convince them that they should give up the Indra Puja. That's going to really annoy Indra, but that also gives him an opportunity to establish the worship of Govardhan Hill and to teach the same lesson as is taught in the Bhagavad Gita. And actually the same lesson that we're teaching. This is our mission. The mission of the Krishna Consciousness Movement is to teach, to demonstrate that exclusive devotion to Krishna is the ultimate goal that will satisfy everybody, that will bring the peace and happiness that people are looking for, albeit in the wrong place. What people are really looking for will be achieved by devotion to the Lord, pure devotional service also. A particular type of service, not any old service. What is Krishna saying? What is the purpose for worshipping Indra? Indra, as a demigod, has a job to perform. His service is to provide the results of your past activities. That's all he's meant to do. And so therefore, and not only that, the results of our past activities are predetermined. So this is his argument. Why worship Indra? Because worshipping him, what can he do? How can he change things? He has to, by dint of his service, provide us with our past rewards, or the rewards that we have accumulated as a result of our past activities. So what's the point? Why worship Indra? But, as it's pointed out right at the beginning of the purport, because, you know, there are two sides to this sort of argument, or there's two things that have to be taken into consideration when considering karma, activity, and the reactions that we get. Right? And because it does appear, it does appear that we are bound to suffer the results of our past. In fact, it's a fact. We are bound to suffer the results of our past activities. So whatever good we achieve in this lifetime, whatever bad we get, it's already predetermined. Right? Now, there's a problem with emphasising only that aspect of karma. Because then people will do all sorts of nonsense and say, oh, it's just my past, what can I do? Right? Kamsa used that argument with Vasudeva and Devaki. What can I do? I'm a demon, therefore I had to kill your children. Right? It's just my, you know, I'm a demon. Right? But what it negates, or what it ignores, and the devotees point out here, Yudhananda Maharaj is pointing out in this purport, this doesn't negate, or it shouldn't negate, and it can't negate everybody's personality, basically. And everybody's personality manifests through our personal desire, our free will, in other words. So there's two things that have an influence on what happens in the future. There's our past activities, certainly, brought about as a result of the conditioning that we've accumulated or have acquired as a result of our the modes of material nature that we've acquired. But the other powerful and not to be ignored influence is the individuality, the independence, if you like, of the living entity. That's our independence. So as is pointed out here in the purport, certainly you will be, say for example, you may be born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Right? Although most of us are not. Right. In the song My Generation, you know, by Pete Townsend here, I was born with a plastic spoon in my mouth. Poor, in other words. But say you are, you're very wealthy. You have a choice. And this is an example. Where do we see an example of wealth but then abused? In the case of Manigriva and Nala Kuvera, they were sons of Kuvera, sons of the demigod Kuvera. And so they had a choice. They could live a pious life living as the son of the demigod, or because of their great wealth and opportunity, they could live a degraded life. Right? They still got the results of their past good karma, if you like, living in a fabulously opulent situation in the heavenly gardens of the demigods, of the planets of the demigods, with beautiful young girls which they could enjoy. They got their good karma, but how they used it, right? How they took advantage of that opportunity, that was up to their choice. They didn't have to use it for their sense gratification, although that's what they did do. So this point of free will then makes for an interesting future. And it's also what ultimately keeps the demigods on their toes as well, because they have to provide you certainly the results of your past, right? But they're also keeping track of the choices that you make, so they're going to then determine what happens in the future. Like Yamaraj is described. Yamaraj is a very special devotee, actually. Yamaraj is a very, very powerful personality. It's sometimes described that Yamaraj is described as being as good as the super soul, right? Because he knows what everybody is doing. Right? Can you imagine that? We can't even work out what we're doing. But he knows what everybody's doing, and he's keeping track of it. Because of the fact that each one of us has choice. Each one of us has an opportunity to choose what we should do. This is why we were discussing last night, why don't we just chant Hare Krishna and, love Krishna? Why don't we just chant Hare Krishna and all be happy? Well, chanting Hare Krishna and being happy is fine, but we also need to know how to behave properly, right? And so therefore, a lot of instruction in the Bhagavad Gita is based on, understanding what are the principles of karma. Understanding what is good karma, understanding what is bad karma, but more importantly, especially for the devotees, understanding what is akarma. Activity that has no reaction, right? In other words, transcendental behavior or transcendental activities, spiritual activities. So one of the reasons why we study philosophy or the teachings, especially of the Bhagavad Gita, is to understand how to act properly. How to make the right kind of choices. This is very important. We should act in such a way so as to enhance our Krishna consciousness, enhance our understanding of who we really are, rather than getting confused. And of course, in a modern age, even though people act as if they know everything, present themselves as if they know everything, right? Actually, modern society knows nothing in reality. They don't know how to make the right choices in life. Which is one of the reasons why we need, actually Prabhupada mentions, by the association of the devotees and by reading the authorized literatures, one can learn how to make the right choices so that one can actually have control over what happens in the future. It's interesting, Prabhupada mentions that a brahmana, or a person in a mode of goodness, can know what has happened in the past, right? Can understand what is happening now in the present, and can know what their destination will be in the future. That's available for anybody. And especially if we study the Bhagavatam and study the Bhagavad Gita, by acting properly, we can situate ourselves in a mode of understanding. Who am I? Where have I come from? And what do I need to do in order to go to the destination that I want in the future? Ultimately, the destination that we want is to re-establish ourselves in our swabhava. Actually, the word here is mentioned, swabhava. We want, although in this case swabhava means conditioned nature, but we want actually, well, not swabhava, let's say swarupa. We want our original spiritual form. That's the destination that we're heading towards, or we should be heading towards. Huh? But we have to learn how to exercise our options, make our choices, so that our destination, that will be our destination. Otherwise, what happens is we'll get caught up in the reactions given to us by the demigods, by Yamaraj, or whatever. Of course, for the devotees, they have a very special destination. That's exemplified by the story of Ajamil. There are special considerations for devotees. Anybody who is a devotee, anybody who at one point in time or another tries to surrender to Krishna, then they're looked after, actually. They're carefully, they're specially taken care of. Although that doesn't mean that we can, you know, abuse the facility. We shouldn't abuse the facility. We should still utilize the opportunities that we've got for making spiritual advancement. But although sometimes the devotees, due to their conditioning, may not make the right choices. And so therefore, you know, we find on the path of spiritual advancement lots of twists and turns. As we try to, you know, get to the destination, we find lots of obstacles. And actually, it's interesting, Prabhupada mentions that a Kanishta Adhikari, Kanishta Bhakta, if you like, is a person who has some interest in serving God, but also has their material concerns at heart, right? So they have some inclination to serve God, but they're very concerned about their own future. In other words, you know, like most people, they're tuned into one station on the FM band, right? WIIFM, right? You know what that stands for? Yeah. What's in it for me? What's in it for me? That's what we think. And that's why we don't surrender to Krishna, because we're thinking, hang on a second. If I give up everything, what's going to happen to me? Huh? Ajit Prabhupada gives a very nice example. He says, we're very much like a diseased person who's lying in his hospital bed. And the doctor comes along and says, and very sick, very, very sick, and the doctor comes along and says, look, it won't be too long before you'll be able to eat healthily and act normally. But because we're so sick, we think, oh, no, you can't imagine being healthy and acting normally and eating healthily. Because in a hospital bed, your eating is, you know, all mushy food that's not been cooked properly. And, you know, your activities are very painful, and you have to pass stool and urine in your bed and so forth, you know. So the idea of activity for somebody who's in a conditioned state, the only activity that he can think of is his present activity, which is very painful and not very pleasing. So when we think of activity in Krishna consciousness, we think of the current activities that we're performing, and we think, oh no, it's too hard, I can't do it. Thinking that it's the same as the activities that we're performing in material life. But actually the activities in devotional service are ananda. They're blissful. They're fully blissful. But we don't know that. We haven't experienced it. All our experiences is of the material. So it's hard for us to make that choice sometimes. Although Prabhupada mentions that therefore we have to follow the instructions of Rupa Goswami. Maintain enthusiasm, be determined, be confident of the end result. Tat tat karma pravartanat, follow the regulated principles, the injunctions that are recommended for us in the scriptures and by the acharyas. Chato vritte, follow in the footsteps of the previous devotees. Avoid materialistic association. In this way we can make progress from Kanishta Adhikari, where we're thinking about ourselves primarily, to Madhyam Adhikari, as Maharaj mentioned last night, interestingly. Madhyamadhikari means one who's not so concerned about himself, more concerned for the welfare of others. And then that's when a person starts to make significant, rapid advancement. That's why Prabhupada encouraged his disciples to preach. And, you know, that wasn't just Prabhupada's idea. It's Lord Chaitanya's idea, actually. It's Lord Chaitanya's example, and it's Lord Chaitanya's process. This is the means by which we can learn how to make the right decisions. By becoming a good sadhaka, but then taking the knowledge and the understanding that we have of the mission of Prabhupada. And of course the mission of Prabhupada is following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And that mission is the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Then by taking advantage of that understanding, we then go and give it to others. We are automatically, naturally elevated to a very high position in devotional understanding and get an opportunity to then see things clearly and make the right decisions. As is mentioned here, we retain the freedom to select. We have the freedom to select our path. It's not, although Krishna is saying here, it's all indicating, it's all predetermined, there's nothing you can do. It's not a fact. Certainly the happiness and distress that we will get as a result of our past material activities is predetermined. Yes, that's a fact. But what happens in the future is influenced very much also by the choices that we make. And it's interesting. The choices that we make as devotees will determine whether we're on the transcendental platform or on the conditioned platform. Because once a devotee rises up to the transcendental platform, then it doesn't matter whether good or bad or whatever happens. It doesn't care. Once one rises, what is it? Mamcha yovi abhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. When one engages in full devotional service, without being deviated, mamcha your vyabhichari. Vyabhichari means to be deviated. So without that deviation, by being engaged in devotional service, then what happens? Sagunam samatityaitan. One can overcome. One is elevated actually by Krishna. It's not that we overcome, but Krishna elevates the devotee's consciousness to the point where Brahma Bhuta, one comes to the realization that one's not the body, that one's not a product of the material nature, but rather that one is transcendental. Which is ultimately awarded by Krishna. The demigods don't have anything to do with these things. When a person takes to devotional life, then one is then freed from the reactions of one's past karmas, and then the demigods don't have any, obviously they do because they're facilitating the whole material creation, but the chain of karmic reactions is then broken for a devotee. Devotees are, as I mentioned before, devotees are actually put into a special category. This is illustrated by Ajamil. You know, Ajamil was a very sinful person, but he was engaged in devotional service, albeit Agyata Sukriti, unknowingly, by chanting the name of Narayan. He was chanting the name of his son, Narayan. But as Prabhupada points out, chanting is the beginning of devotional service. And so, because he was chanting the name of Narayan, at the time of death, the Yamadutas came because they knew he was very sinful. But because he had been chanting the name of Narayan, the Vishnu Dutas came as well. The Vishnu Dutas came as well. So he's a devotee, he's chanting the name of Krishna. And then there was a conversation between the Yamadutas and the Vishnu Dutas. There was a competition as to who would take him. We should take him because he's sinful. The Vishnu Duta said, no, you can't. Actually, the Vishnu Duta said, all right, okay, we're going to test you. Do you really know who you should take and who you shouldn't take? And what are the qualifications of those who you should take? But there are people who you shouldn't take. What are their qualifications? Right? And it was then established. Ultimately, it was established in the end that those who chant the name, those who engage in some form of devotional service or other, and especially those who are chanting the names seriously, even if they perform sinful activities, they shouldn't be disturbed by the Yamadutas. Yeah? Special. The devotees are in a special category. They're actually looked after by Krishna. As Krishna says, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Jogamtam Jinamam Upayamti Te. Krishna says, I protect the devotees. I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So, the devotees are meant to exercise their free will in such a way so that their activities are engaged in devotional service to Krishna. And then Krishna reciprocates with those devotees in such a way that their karmic reactions are actually nullified. That's why he recommends. Sarva dharman parityaja mame kam savaram raja aham tvam papa sava papebhyo. All of the reactions, whether they're good or bad, will be nullified. Moksha yasyami ma shuchaha, do not fear, I will liberate you. So, the demigods are obliged to award the results of one's past activities, but for one who surrenders to Krishna, then those calculations are not considered anymore. The devotees come under Krishna's protection. They come under the protection of the Vishnu Dutas, not the Yama Dutas. The Yamadutas are there specifically for punishing impious or sinful people. So for the devotees, especially for the devotees who make the right choices, in order to make the right choices, we need to come from a point of Kanishta Adhikari to the point of Madhyam Adhikari. And as Prabhupada points out, one of the best ways of doing that is to educate ourselves. We need to be educated. And the best way to educate ourselves is to take advantage of the association of the devotees and to study the authorized texts. In other words, read Prabhupada's books. Take advantage of the association of the devotees and hear from them how one should behave, what are the right choices to make. And study the literature, because then what happens is one's consciousness changes. And so especially I notice it when I read Prabhupada's books regularly, then my consciousness changes so that your view of things, should have turned that off, shouldn't I? Ignore. Sorry, Sarvamangala. But hang on, so try. What happens is they try again. But we'll fix that up. Turn on flight mode. I should have done that before. I thought about it, but I forgot to do it. When you associate with the devotees, and when you study Prabhupada's books, then your vision changes. Right? This is what we call Shastra Chakshus or Jnana Chakshus. Chakshu means to see. So instead of seeing from a material point of view, being tuned into WIIFM, you know, what's in it for me, actually we still are tuned into the same station. But we have a proper understanding of who we are. Right? Otherwise we're thinking, yes, I am the body, I am an Australian, I love my country. Oi, oi, oi. Right. Go for gold. How many gold medals have we got today? Actually, it's pretty boring, you know, when you're winning, thrashing everybody, it's not even fun. What are people really interested in? The people are interested in the really close games, you know, right, where the Kiwis and the Aussies are playing netball, for example, and it's a grudge match. They're the games that they're really interested in. There's the chance of losing, right? That's what they're really interested in, the chance of losing. But anyway, material consciousness. I am an Australian, I love my country. As opposed to spiritual consciousness, which is, I am Krishna's servant, and I should be engaged in Krishna's service in order to be happy. From a material point of view, even if you're successful, sometimes you're still unhappy. I was talking to one girl last week and she was telling me, you know, I have money, I have a job, I'm well situated, I can live in, she's from India, and she, you know, I can live in Australia, I can live very comfortably, I'm well educated, but I'm unhappy. Right? This is, from a material point of view, you can actually be successful but still be miserable. Cause of so many problems. You know, an affluent country like Australia is a very good example. We are comfortable, well off, well endowed, but, you know, high rates of suicide, high rates of depression, people are not happy. Whereas for the devotees, Prabhupada points out, you know, my disciples are happy to sleep on the floor, they all come from very wealthy families, but, you know, they don't mind sleeping on the floor and working very hard for Krishna. Have very little material facility, but despite the fact that they're lacking material facility, they're happy. Right? That's the difference. So the devotees, actually it's not that the devotees aren't tuned into selfishness, if you like, but they have a proper conception of who the self is. This is very important. To have the proper conception of what the self is, and then understand what true selfishness is. True selfishness means actually working for one's true benefit. And of course, the Madhyama Adhikari understands the true benefit is ultimately helping everybody. Right? Helping everybody, including myself, make some progress in our spiritual life. Forget the karmic reactions. They're going to happen, whether you like it or not. They will happen. So let's ignore all of that and worry about our future, but worry about our future in becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness. We are going to get the reactions, whether we like it or not. We'll be successful and we'll be unsuccessful. Right? When you're in your youth, you think, yes, I'll be successful. But when you get to middle age, and certainly when you get to old age, who is successful in this world? Right? Prabhupada would always make this comment, you know, he's talking about survival of the fittest. He said, who survives? Who survives? Nobody survives. Everybody is 100% loser. Right? So ultimately we have to be prepared to face that. Right? And especially, you know, we spend most of our life working hard to be successful, but the end result will always be disappointing. This is one of the realizations that I had when I just had my operation recently. I was just thinking, man, this is what I've got to look forward to. The death of this body. And it is not pleasant. And one has to be able to transcend that. And I was thinking, I'm not transcending this very well. I'm not doing a very good job on this one. And you know, the nature of the material creation is such that things never go according to plan. You know, we think, oh yes, at the time of death, I'll be relaxed and comfortable and I'll be able to remember Krishna. It just doesn't happen like that. It's painful, it's uncomfortable, it's disturbing. Yeah? Material existence is like that. Always. Upadruttaha, this symptom of Kali Yuga, everybody's always disturbed. So, what is recommended for the devotees is make enough advancement to progress in our spiritual life so that at least we're happy in the fact that we're making spiritual progress. That will satisfy us enough. Even in difficult circumstances, a devotee can be happy if he's making spiritual advancement. So that we can see things from the right perspective. What does Krishna say? Matschita Shavadurgani. Nice verse from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Matschita, if you think of me, Sarva Durgani, all difficulties. Durga means difficult going, right? Durgani means Sarva Durgani. Whatever difficulties you face, Matschita, consciousness, in the consciousness of me, Mat Prasada Tarishyasi, you will be able to overcome by my mercy, Krishna says. Matschita, Sarva Durgani, Mat Prasada Tarishyasi. You can overcome all difficulties by remaining conscious of me. So that's what a devotee wants. Although, you know, we're worrying, oh, what's going to happen to me? What's my career going to be? Who am I going to marry? What will, you know, there's so many things. Right? But Krishna says if we just think of him, and that's basically what we're endeavouring to do, to focus our consciousness so that we can remember Krishna, then we can overcome all of the difficulties, all of the problems. But however, ta chetvam ahankaran, he says, alternatively, if you act on a false, you know, if you think you're the doer, ahankara, if you think you're the doer, what is it? Ta chetvam ahankaran, but if you think you're the doer, Nasroshyasi, you will not hear me. Right? Nasroshyasi, you won't hear me. And Vinamshati, you'll be destroyed, wiped out. Interesting. This is instructions to Arjuna. Arjuna's just about to embark on a huge battle, right? Huge warfare. And what's Krishna saying? Matschita, think of me. And you'll overcome all of the problems. It's very simple. And these are the instructions on surrendering to Krishna. What's the first thing that Krishna says in the process of how to be a devotee? Manmana, think of me. It was nice that Maharaj was mentioning yesterday. You know, how do we think of Krishna? Well, you can't see Krishna. Oh, okay, when you're just drinking water. Huh? And I was thinking, yeah, it's a long time since I drank a glass of water. I think, oh, that's the taste of Krishna. This is how covered over, you know, we think, yeah, I'm a devotee. I've been around for a while, I'm a devotee. But then we forget to think of Krishna when we're drinking a glass of water. What kind of a devotee are we? A forgetful devotee. We forget Krishna, not think of Krishna. But Krishna's instruction is, always think of me. Manmana, matschita. Always think of me, and then what? Sarva Durgani, you can overcome all difficulties by Krishna's mercy. Mat Prasada Trishyasi. Of course, we're always looking for Krishna's prasadam. But of course, Krishna's prasadam manifests in different ways. Right? Krishna has also a club. And even sometimes the club is used on his devotees for purification. whatever. But we have to see it ultimately as Krishna's arrangement. And these are dependent ultimately on our free will. This is our choice. We have a choice, actually. We have a choice to either depend on Krishna or depend on our own feeble efforts. But in order to make progress, we ultimately have to depend upon Krishna. Make the choices that put us in a position where we're dependent upon Krishna's mercy. And then when we're in that situation where we're fully dependent upon Krishna, then, you know, whether it's a good reaction or a bad reaction provided by the demigods, it doesn't really matter. Because by being engaged in devotional service, devotees are actually elevated to a higher position where they see things with the perspective of a transcendentalist. Which is why we study Prabhupada's books, why we associate with the devotees, because that's the vision that we... That it's attractive, actually, that vision. And that detachment that comes from a transcendental vision is actually very... It's desirable. Very attractive. And very satisfying. So we have the choice. We do have choices. And that's why life remains interesting, despite the fact that, you know, our good and bad is already predetermined. You know, because if everything was predetermined, then how interesting would life be? It'd just be boring. You'd just be forced. But we're obviously not forced. And that's because the other feature which Krishna's missing out here, is not mentioning, and what makes life interesting is the fact that we do have choice at every moment. Which is very interesting, because what it means is the demigods and Yamaraj and so forth, they're always, you know, there's that chance of, you know, which way is it going to go? So therefore, that's why it always remains interesting. And as Prabhupada points out, there's one thing that Krishna never interferes with. Krishna never interferes with our choice. We always have the choice. We can surrender or not. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
It does seem for the person who hasn't come in contact with Krishna or the devotees or Shastra that they don't have a choice, because there's simple proclivity as well as the three modes of nature pushing them. The slokas of wandering up and down the universe, and then they come in contact with the Guru or Krishna, so they don't really have a choice.
They only have one choice. That is to surrender to Krishna. But they don't want to do it. So they take the other choice, which is not to surrender to Krishna. And then people have to be prepared to accept the reactions then.
And then it becomes a repetitive cycle when they're thrown into ignorance. That only by the mercy of the devotee or a Gyana Sukriti that it gets broken again.
Yeah.
So that during that stage they don't have a choice until they get the mercy.
Well, no, they do get choice. You can have the dry stool or the wet stool. There is some element of choice. Even in material existence, there's still some facsimile of choice. You can have a red car or a white car or a blue car or a green car or whatever. You know what I mean? It appears as if there's choice. But ultimately they're forced. Yes, they're forced to accept the reactions. But even still, there's still the individuality. There's still individuality. So, you know, and this is why to understand karma and reactions is not easy, because the individual, you know, your individual choices do play a part in what happens. So?
Makes sense. Whatever happiness and distress we face in this life are fixed depending on our past karmas.
Yes.
So, in one sense, we don't have any choice because whatever you do, you will get the same amount of happiness or distress.
Yes, on the material platform. But what about the spirit? If you make choices that are transcendental to the material platform, on the spiritual platform, then you move into a different realm of existence. And then Krishna's in charge.
So does that mean we don't get the same happiness or distress depending on our customs?
Material happiness and distress will be the same. But your perception of those will change. Right? Your perception of happiness and distress changes as a devotee. So, you know, it's interesting, as a devotee, what ordinarily we would have thought to be unpleasant and a challenge, we might be enthusiastic about as a devotee. I remember once, we used to sell candles, and you know, I didn't join the Hare Krishna movement to become a candle salesman. In fact, I didn't join the Hare Krishna movement to do a lot of things that I did in the first few years of being a devotee. But I remember once having a dream where I was in a big long shopping strip, you know, and there was just shops and shops and shops and shops and shops. And I was thinking, wow, this is great. Look at all those shops that I could go and sell candles in, you know. And I woke up and thought, well, that's pretty strange. You know, normally I wouldn't think like that. But my consciousness had changed because, you know, we didn't mind sacrificing, you know, time and effort to collecting money to help preach Krishna consciousness. You know, the very idea of even selling anything before I became a devotee was like, you know, pretty strange. I was, you know, that would be considered a very materialistic thing to do, right? So it's interesting how the mood of a devotee changes when he surrenders, and then what normally would be a challenge and distasteful or, you know, not attractive might become attractive because it can be used in Krishna's service, it can be used to facilitate our Krishna consciousness and as such we find it then desirable. Right? Just like, for example, you know, you might find, or everybody finds, ringing people up to ask them to give a donation is not easy, right? Not easy. But we know that if we do that, those people benefit by giving some contribution to the Krishna consciousness movement. We invite them to come for the festivals, and you know, they may not give us anything, but we know that if we ring people up and ask them to come to the festival and give a donation to Krishna, then that, you know, pretty much guarantees we double our income from a festival, say, for example. Right, for Gaur Purnima, the devotees were writing to me when I was in India. They were writing to me, "Oh, Prabhu, is it really necessary to ring all of these people up? We already rang them up 2 times last year. You know, is it really beneficial?" And it, you know, it's pain ringing up the same, you know, ring up the same person and getting the same response, and it may not always be favourable, right? But the interesting thing is that if we look at the results from this year and we look at the results from last year, we rarely would do, say, $8,000 to $10,000 from Gaur Purnima. But this year we did $16,000 to $18,000. And what's the difference? The difference is that we rang people up and asked them to come to the festival and to help out. Right? Now, we might not like ringing people up, but we know, okay, this is for Krishna. It's a bit of an austerity, but it's beneficial. It's beneficial for me and it's beneficial for him. And then every now and again you meet, you know, you get somebody who's a bit of a devotee. And then you get to preach about Krishna and then it makes it worth it, right? I remember I used to ring people up to buy sets of books, and it was, you know, people were somewhat, you knew that the person was somewhat interested in Krishna consciousness because they had already purchased some books, but you never really knew what you were going to get on the other end. So it was a challenge. But then it would always be worth it because at some point in the night, and usually it was the last telephone call, and the reason why it was the last telephone call because you spent an hour with somebody just preaching to them. Huh? And it would always be worth it. At 6:30 at night, I would start calling people. And it used to be so hard to pick up that telephone and just dial the first number. Because you just didn't know what you were going to get on the other end. But then always, by the end of the night, and it would always be the last person, and the reason why it was the last person is because you spent an hour and a half talking to them. You know, end up 9:30 or 10 o'clock. But it would always be somebody who would eventually be a devotee. And then eventually, by cultivating that person over a few weeks, it often would happen. By that cultivation, by the time I went to visit that person, I knew that I would be selling him a full set of books. So you know, it's ultimately worth it. But in the beginning, you might think, do I really have to ring these people up? They're not devotees. They're not interested. They don't want to do any service to Krishna. Mine will trick you. But after some time, we'll realize. Actually, no. It's okay. There's a few demons out there, but there's a lot of devotees too, so it's worth it. So let me do it. Same book distribution, right? How easy is it to get out on the street first thing in the morning? It's not easy. But then by the end of the afternoon, you know, if you've had a good day, it's like, wow, this is nectar. Bring it on. Where are all the bhaktas? They're all bhaktas. In the morning, they're all demons. Of course, on a tough day, they're still all demons, right? Where are the devotees? There aren't any devotees out here. Krishna, please help me. Send along a devotee. But actually, even that's not bad. That's, you know, because the problem with having good days is when we start thinking, yeah, I'm pretty good at this. I'm starting to get this down now. I'm actually a good book distributor. And then, you know, the head starts to boom. We start to think we're a pretty advanced devotee. So then Krishna doesn't send anybody along just to shrink us back down to, you know, eternal servant. You know, insignificant servant of Krishna as opposed to saviour of the whole universe.
With this Padma Gita verse is just surrender to me.
Yeah.
Is that possible straight away? Because the next slide just says if you can't do this, take up the knowledge, if you can't do this, offer your truths. There's a sequence of slides after that that says, ultimately do this, but if you can't, you do this, you do this. Is that still part of the process of bhakti?
Yes, it is. It is possible to surrender to Krishna in a moment. But for those who can't surrender to Krishna in a moment, then there is the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Right? And for those who can't follow the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, then, you know, you can just work for Krishna. And if you can't work for Krishna, then you can just give a little bit of what you do for Krishna.
Huh? So there's all different situations people come in.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all individuals. You know, some days we fired up and surrendered, and the next day all of a sudden it's like, you know, wild horses couldn't drag us further. Huh? So
Well,
But that's why sadhana bhakti is recommended, actually, to come to the point of surrendering in a moment. Because it means basically almost every part of the day we're going to have to surrender to some regulated activity, you know what I mean? And so that's the process of surrendering at every moment, following the process of Vaidhi.
Is it we get to that point then go back into like
some of us? Some of us do. Yep. Occasionally. Huh? Some days we're making progress, other days it's like pulling teeth. And then sometimes we take a holiday from, you know, surrendering for a week or a couple of weeks or a month or a few months or a year or a couple of years or a few lifetimes even. It happens. Yes, right in the beginning. Yes.
It seems like it is tolerate happiness than distress, but I'm wondering how do you see them as the same, and also how do you discriminate what is material happiness and distress, and how do you understand
it? Ooh, that's a lot of questions. Happiness is dangerous because it conditions us to material life. And Prabhupada mentions that actually the happiness that we experience is the enemy of the spirit soul, because it keeps us comfortable in a material world. And so therefore we have to be careful about, you know, being happy as such. It's dangerous. It's a danger. But of course, you know, for the devotees, when we're in a comfortable situation, then we can understand actually this is Krishna's arrangement. And usually we can understand it won't be long before there'll be some, you know, difficulty. As a devotee, you know, we're not choosing what is exactly an easy life. When you're a preacher, then you'll always find some challenge and some disturbance, right? So it's not that we're choosing a path which is guaranteed to be challenging, right? It's guaranteed because people just basically are inimical to God. And Prabhupada gives the example of, you know, Haridas Thakur, Jesus Christ, and others, Prahlad Maharaj, you know, devotees will, just by the nature of the service that we perform, be in challenging situations. Here's my understanding. You know, how do we appreciate, you know, say the happiness or the good things, if you like? Well, for example, if I was not a devotee, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be living in Albert Park. Albert Park is one of the most expensive suburbs in Melbourne to live in, for example, right? But we live in a peaceful atmosphere. It's clean. We get plenty to eat. We've got good association. We, you know, live in a palace most of the time, right? So we're enjoying our spiritual happiness, if you like, right? Kirtans, ecstatic, the prasadam is good. Even in one sense, preaching, say for those of us who live in Australia and New Zealand and similar locations, we're liked by people. Right? People like us, generally speaking, and they're friendly. You know, like, you know, if you were living in what's an example? Turkmenistan, is it? Or Azerbaijan? You know, they're locking devotees up at the moment and sticking them in jail for being Hare Krishnas, still. Right? So, you know, they've stopped locking us up and putting us in jail, at least. Although, I don't know if you saw Akendra's webpage The other day he had that picture, he's got that picture of Korma being taken off to jail by the police. And that was one of the first Hari Nams that I went on in Melbourne. And Korma got dragged on, I thought. And, you know, just a week before that, some guys came along and fired shotguns through the Brahmachari Ashram windows. Two shotgun blasts through Korma's window, actually. So I was thinking, boy, what have I got myself? I thought the Hare Krishnas were peace and love. And this is like a war zone. But, you know, so on the whole, we are enjoying our spiritual happiness, if you like, right? We have enough money to at least pay the bills and feed ourselves nicely and to be dressed, you know, properly clothed and so forth. But by the same token, there are also the challenges that come from being a devotee. one of the ladies who lives down the road here is trying to sell her house, and they couldn't sell it, right? And I was just happened to be walking around a block the other night, and I met her and I said, "Hi, how's it going?" And she said, "Look, I've got to complain. I've got to complain to you." She said, "Oh, we're trying to sell our house, and we can't sell it because of all of the people coming to the temple. All the Indians coming to the temple." What? But anyway, you know, these are the kind of things you have to put up with. And that's minor. I mean, there was a point when everybody around here was ringing the council every second day, you know, encouraging the council to get rid of us. And then because the devotees were making so much noise, what they did was they set up a caravan in the backyard, and they were taping all of the noise that was coming out of the temple. So for Mangal Aarti, we used to have Mangal Aarti. There was no instruments, and one of the devotees would clap. And it'd be Samsara Dava until 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock we'd have the big kirtan and so on and so forth. But there was a big court case. The council said, "You're not a religion. You know, you owe us $26,000 in rates." So it was a big. In 1978, when I joined, so it was a big court battle with the council over the $26,000 that we owed them, which was a lot of money in those days. It would have put us out of business. So you know, there are always challenges. These days, the challenges are a lot less than they used to be. But then, you know, there's personal challenges that we face in our spiritual life, which make us unhappy, right? Distressed. We can be distressed. I'm not making enough advancement. I'm still attached to this. So there, you know, there's spiritual happiness and spiritual distress, if you like, brought about by the fact that we're devotees and we're trying to preach Krishna consciousness. We're trying to make advancement ourselves. And material happiness and distress, well, I know recently from my own personal experience when I had to go to hospital, I know that was material. That was, you know, I was just getting the reactions from my past misdeeds. So that happens too, right?
Well, can I ask a question?
Yeah, you can ask us first. Your questions are always usually a bit of a challenge, and it's 9:05 when we should be having breakfast, so if it's a very, very short question. From past experience, generally not, but anyway, far away.
How do we, in terms of distress, we say that if a karmic, a relative passes away, he has an agony, and therefore he's crying for the material level.
Yeah.
But whereas a devotee, when his spiritual master or his relative, his father, mother, if another devotee passes away, therefore his agony is on the spiritual platform.
Yeah.
How do you differentiate the agony in terms of the spiritual versus mundane? Is it only in terms of consciousness or in terms of experience? Does the person feel anything?
Feelings are very often the same. We are attached to the devotees because they're attached or connected to Krishna, right? And so therefore that's what makes our emotions and activities Krishna conscious. It's because there's a connection with Krishna. We may even experience the same emotions, right, in feeling separation from a devotee as we would from our material relations. So it's hard to differentiate the two, but because there's a connection with Krishna, that's Krishna conscious. Simply put, right?
But in terms of pain, it is the same.
Maybe.
Because is it not that when you are connected to Krishna consciousness, that there's something like spiritual agony versus the mundane, because they have to...
Can be. Depends on the consciousness of the devotee. But yes, actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described there is no greater pain than the pain of separation from the devotees. Yeah. We should finish here. Kandavaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.